Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a surveillance guy. He does not work in Las Vegas and would rather not tell you where he does work, but he seems to know what he's talking about. So we have asked a lot of our listeners questions, and let's see where they go.
Before we get into the listener questions, can I ask how long have you been in surveillance?
I've been doing this for over a decade.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. What's the value to coloring up your chips and leaving the blackjack table occasionally during high counts? Would that throw off a surveillance guy thinking this guy clearly knows squat if he's, the player clearly knows squat if he's doing such a thing? Or would that be totally ignored and the player is just losing EV?
No, I could totally see that working. As long as you're willing to give up your EV, I mean, depending on how high the count is at the time, it would definitely throw us off if it's, you know, getting plus 12, plus 15, and you walk. You know, there might be some doubt thrown in our mind there, but who's to say we won't be following you to wherever you go? So there's always a chance that, you know, that would throw somebody off the scent, you know, especially if it's a busy night, you know, maybe Friday, Saturday night, where things are going off and the place is rocking and, you know, you have a chance to blend in to another area or come back to that same game. But yeah, that definitely may work. Stashing away your color chips, you know, purple, orange, black, even black. But yeah, just hiding those and keeping those out of sight, coloring up frequently would help. Richard, I think you talked about that before.
Yeah, I would say the danger of that idea is you don't know if that's the shoe they're watching. You know what I mean? So it's a kind of a risky thing because, I mean, do you do much monitoring of people in real time, or is it usually a review of play after the fact?
It could be both. A lot of our initiated, you know, we may get called by the pit saying, hey, can you check this player out? We may, you know, do it on our own, and we go off of, you know, of course, I guess, you know, most of the time it's a high-low count just for to be generic, but yeah, I mean, we have the ability to go back and review, but most of the time I think a rundown will be live. So yeah, you're playing a cat and mouse game, I guess. If you're moving to another table, you're really hurting yourself more than anything.
So on the high-low count, are the workers in your casino all fluent in that? Do you use software to analyze the play, or how good can you judge whether there is a card counter there or not?
We like our people to be fluent, yes. It's one of the things that we train on. You know, I basically train them how to be an advantage player, especially when it comes to blackjack, because how are you supposed to be able to identify one if you can't do it yourself? So you always want to have them be ready to jump in and count somebody down anytime. There are software programs out there, but sometimes they are very time consuming to put somebody, you know, onto that program, and to just have them go sit there for an hour or two to run somebody through it could take time. You might want to do that in some dead time. But yeah, most of our evaluation is done live by people that do know how to evaluate a player.
Do you actually use the software at all in your particular, where you're working?
I do. I've been at several different properties, and I think each one has had it. It's very time consuming. I don't find it to be extremely beneficial for evaluating a player as far as advantage play goes, because we get what we need right there on the video.
I don't know if you've read Burning the Tables in Las Vegas by Ian Anderson, but he has all these sort of cover plays that he recommends. And I'm wondering if you think that might fool you guys, that, you know, you have a player who maybe he always stands on 16 versus a 10, even if the counts are negative, or occasionally he doesn't hit soft 18 against a 10. Is that going to be enough to fool anybody, or no?
As far as the individual, or as far as the program goes?
As far as individuals who are counting people down.
Yeah, it could. I mean, your bet fluctuation is going to be probably the biggest tool in your bag. You know, if it's plus 10 and you drop down to a quarter, you know, true count plus 4 or something like that, you drop down to 50 or 100 when you were at 5, that may send the flag up like, oh, maybe they don't know what they're doing. But again, you know, it's all up to your side. How much are you willing to give up in one cover play, in one camouflage?
And would, like, who would make the decision? For example, let's say you counted a guy down like that, and then I assume you have to call somebody, a shift manager or whatever, and then you say, well, I counted the guy down, his bets are moving mostly with the count, but he makes some bad plays. Then do you make the decision we should get rid of the guy, or is that up to the shift boss, or how does that work?
So that's all on table games. We give our evaluation of the player as best we can. So if there's a deciding factor, if the needle is, you know, dead center, so to say, and we don't know, maybe they're not counting, maybe they are. It is hard to tell, especially if it's done very well. But the needle, the deciding factor could be, like you said, the deviations. You know, did they make the correct deviation here and there? And if you try to disguise that well enough, it may push the needle to no. But you know, you may be reevaluated on another visit. But yeah, that's all in the hands of table games. We give our recommendation and we pass it off to them. And we have given the response before where it was just, you know, hey, we're not sure. It looks like they may be. We ran down 3 or 4 shoes and we can't tell. You know, sometimes it is that close. Most of the time it's cut and dry, but there are those gray area situations. But table games always usually makes the decision on whether to keep the player or not.
Do you ever have situations where you say, no, this guy is a losing player, and they throw him out anyway?
I've never come across that one, no.
Yeah.
That would be
a losing. Go ahead.
I was going to ask about, do you guys, have you had any experience with the facial recognition software, and how do you think that performs?
So I've never had one on one of my properties, but I have tested them and I have seen them in a test environment. It's funny, you always hear negative things from surveillance people in the past because sometimes you expect what you see on television, which is, you know, hey, here's a picture and click it. And, you know, you want an answer like right away, but sometimes that doesn't happen. And sometimes they generate a lot of different results. Some of the technology out there is really good. I just don't know how effective they would be in a casino environment because I personally have never seen them. I've seen them demoed in airport situations or in banks or, you know, that kind of environment where sometimes the lighting's really great and sometimes the cameras are really great. And, you know, you have that chance to snap somebody's picture when they're staying still, where you don't always have it in a casino. People are on the move a lot. You know, even at table games, they're not really still. So it's really hard to get a really good picture sometimes.
I had lunch one day with Ted Whiting, who was and probably still is the corporate surveillance director of all MGM properties. And he was trying to get as much information he could about me from me, and I was trying to get as much information I could from him. It was a cat and dog lunch. But they were just about to open up the Washington National, I'm not sure the name of it, the one in D.C., mm-hmm. that just opened up not so long ago. He was really bragging on how good the facial recognition was there. He seemed to think it was really good and could keep up almost with what Facebook does. That is, and, you know, they had the money to spend on it, and they went for what they thought was the best. And he was bragging on it. So I'm guessing it's out there. How affordable it is, how many places are going to install it is a different subject. But if they are willing to spend the money, the tools are there.
Definitely. That's a big part of it. Sorry, Richard, go ahead.
Yeah. and they continue to get better and better every year. And so, you know, in the past, as you said, every surveillance person I talked to just sort of, you know, would shake their head and say it's worthless. But, you know, that was years ago, and things are changing, and they're going to continue to change. And eventually, I think it'll be a real, you know, real threat.
Yeah, I agree. You know, every time you get a new piece of technology, it's obsolete in 6 months to a year, there's something better. And this is the same way. It just keeps evolving and getting better and better and better. I don't doubt that they have something great. Richard, that was a really good point. Bob, I'm sorry. It was a really good point. The money that you're willing to put out, it varies from place to place. And, you know, sometimes that's an expense that people don't want to take on. If that expense is not taken on, and on your end, you're never going to know it unless, you know, somebody comes out and says, yeah, we got great facial recognition. But the technology is definitely out there.
And do you want to spend $10 million on a great system today knowing that in 3 years it's going to be obsolete? So those are interesting.
Well, another complaint that I used to get from surveillance people is that because it's a department that doesn't generate revenue, they don't want to give us any money. So
that's
now when
you're true, it's harder to justify that when you're not front customer service aspect of it.
Right.
Okay. License plates. Is any place you work for actively gathered license plates, able to read them when they come into the parking lot and somehow send that information to somebody?
So this is a multi-level answer. I'm going to have a few multi-level answers, but this is one of them.
Okay.
Yes, we have. Well, we have the ability to if we're following, well, I'll use you for an example, Bob, if we're following you out of the casino, you know, we may zoom in and get your plate, depending on what you did. If you robbed somebody in the casino and we're following you out, we're getting it.
Following me out, you mean following me electronically with camera?
Correct. Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
So yeah, as long as you're on camera coverage and somebody's watching you leave live, if you had done something illegal, then yes, we're going to go for the license plate shot as best as we can get it. For an Advantage player, not all the time, because it's not something that we really, at least in my experience, it's not really something that we sweat that much. You know, if you're coming back, you're coming back. It doesn't matter what you're driving. It's not really that big of a deal. You didn't do anything wrong. And that's one of the things that we try to stress to our people as much as we possibly can, is the difference between Advantage play and cheating, because there are still places that I see that blur that line, and you can't. I hear it on your show all the time, the people that come on and say that, you know, they were making a move somewhere, they were making a play, and then they got locked up, chained to a bench, and, you know, and wrongfully arrested. That's the one thing that we try to prevent, and a lot of times my crew personally, we don't take that route with Advantage play, because we want to differentiate. We don't want to bring this to the police and say, can you run this plate for me? You know, it's a card counter, because we don't want to give them the wrong idea, number one. And number two, it's not really worth their time, and it may not be something that they do.
And
yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Sometimes the distinction between Advantage play and cheating gets pretty gray. There's a number of players who are always on the right side of the law. And there's a number of, we'll call them crossroaders, who frequently stray to the wrong side of the law. And there are people who mix the skills. So they have AP skills, and they also will pass post, or they also will do something else that is definitely over the line. So it isn't a situation where just because you're an Advantage player means you never cheat. Or just because you're a cheater means you never make an Advantage play. So there's going to be shades of gray in there for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to get back to the original question. I think what our listener was asking is, do you have the ability to scan plates of the cars as they enter the parking lot automatically and alert someone that, oh, this player is arriving? I mean, there could be legitimate uses for that. Like if somebody is a whale and one of your great players, it'd be great to know that he's pulling into your parking lot.
Yeah, definitely. There's, and that's, you know, that's kind of a multi-level answer, and that's a great point. So yes, the technology is there. I've personally never had it in action here or anywhere I've been actually, but the, yeah, you would want to know when your big players are there, and it would also work for people who are barred, you know, different reasons, or people that are self-barred. Just catching them before they walk in the door would even be something that would be beneficial. But the technology is definitely there. I don't know. I guess you would need something of high quality, also compatible with whatever program you're using inside the surveillance room at the same time. So your quality would have to be pretty good, I would assume.
Yeah. Here in Las Vegas, where they're paying for parking now, it automatically scans your plate when you pull up to the gate to take your ticket. And then it used to be that it would automatically let you out, you know, for free because it knew that you had a Nevada plate or, in the beginning, it actually would scan your driver's license. You had to scan your driver's license and show a Nevada license to get the parking. But, I wanted to ask about just sort of your day-to-day work. I'm wondering if things have changed in the surveillance room, because I remember years ago, Cellini was kind of complaining that, you know, every time a slot machine was open, surveillance had to be watching it. Every time a fill was going on at a table, they had to be watching that. And I used to wonder, how can you watch all this stuff at the same time? I mean, do you still have to watch all of those things, and how do you have time to look for anything else?
So you definitely have to prioritize your time. Yes, we do still have to watch things that I know, you know, if there are any surveillance people out there listening to this, they would actually probably agree with me that we don't want to watch at times. But our internal controls tell people, call up, you know, surveillance will monitor, and we monitor. And we do a lot of things. There are certain levels of fills. Every place is different. And that's going to be my answer to a lot of different questions that we talk about. Every place is different and every state is different. So there might be state guidelines that say you have to watch so-and-so here and or this process or this procedure or this count. And some states may not have it. But yeah, we will monitor a lot of different things. We handle everything from risk management issues to cheating to advantage play to monitoring the drops, monitoring, and there could be several drops at the same time. You know, everything in between, and that's not even counting the employees that you have to watch just regarding theft. So you do have to prioritize your time and make it valuable. And it, you know, between calls, it's monitor what you can, watch what you can. But as long as you can make your time work for you, it's doable. And we're outnumbered just coming to work. We're outnumbered, you know, could be 500 to 1, depending on how many people are actually in the building and how many people you have on in your surveillance room, which, you know, helps when you can rewind. But you're outnumbered just coming to work, and that's a challenge in itself, just keeping tabs on everybody and making sure everybody's doing the right thing. It can get overwhelming on a Friday and Saturday afternoon into Friday and Saturday evening. You know, that's the busiest days of the week in a lot of places. And, you know, these calls, everybody kind of calls, not thinking of the big picture, but everybody calls to, you know, for their own purpose, their own reason. And sometimes that stuff has to get pushed off, you know, to a period where we're not that busy.
So how much of your time would you say that you actually get to just look around at what you want to look at as opposed to the stuff that you have to look at?
That's a good question. I never really thought of that. Probably in an 8-hour shift, you probably get a good amount of free time, depending on how quickly the individual, you know, whoever, the general surveillance agent, you know, however fast they can bang out a report. Or save, you know, we have to save coverage with a report that we write and things on things that need coverage saved. So I guess it's up to the individual, but I would think that depending on your internal policies and procedures, you know, how closely do you have to watch everything is number one. So for instance, the table drop gets watched pretty closely because there's a lot of money on the floor at one given time. So the person doing that is doing that, and they're not going to be doing anything else. But that doesn't mean the other people in the room aren't free to kind of, you know, start their own investigations or just scan around the floor, looking for people that shouldn't be there, looking for things that don't look right. And that's a lot of our – that's our big deal, is something that doesn't look right.
When you say table drop, is that – you mean when they change the boxes in the tables?
Correct, yeah. Something like that would be a priority, right? So, you know, there's so much money out there at one time. They're clearing out the boxes from every table, putting in the empty boxes for the next day. That's a big thing. So that's going to take up somebody's, you know, that's going to be the duration of however long that takes. We have one or two people watching it. And then the other people in the room, if nothing else is going on, kind of float around and do their own thing. Luckily, that only happens once a day.
So I definitely want to get back to this when something doesn't look right.
Yes.
What can you give some examples of that? Like,
absolutely, yeah. So it's not, you're in Vegas, dead summer, 95 degrees, and you see somebody walking around with a bubble coat on their arm. You know, why do they have a winter coat on? It's 90 degrees. You might want to follow that person, because usually the coat is going to be a distraction for theft of some kind. They're going to steal from another patron. They're going to steal from us. Little things like that. You know, the 99% of the people that come into a casino, they come in to have a good time. They come in to play, to forget about their day-to-day life, and they blend in. And you look around and you see that 1%. We look for the 1%, the people that, you know, don't seem to be looking for a game to play. They seem to be looking for something else. Are they looking for things that may be laying on the floor? Are they looking for things that, you know, did somebody leave a coat on a chair? Or is there money unattended somewhere? And we look for that one person that may be sticking out. You know what I mean? Like, you guys have, APs have a good way of blending in, which is good. You need that. But there are some people out for malicious purposes that don't. They don't blend in very well. And that's the 1% that we're really looking for.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Bob.
Go ahead. I was just going to make a smart-ass comment that I, during the rodeo at South Point, I might have been the only one in there without a cowboy hat, so I certainly stood out. But I'm sorry I really went this way. Richard, what were you going to say?
I'd like smart-ass comments, Bob. That's okay.
Well, actually, I was going to ask specifically about hats. You know, I see different people on the forums. Some people are saying hats are a big tell for advantage players, and others, you know, are on the side of you should always wear a hat. I mean, does a hat make any difference at all to you?
No, I've seen just as many people with hats as without them. Even if you have a hat on low, we can still get, you know, we can grab your picture from a different angle. It doesn't make any difference if you're hiding your face. We'll probably get it.
And you're not more suspicious of someone just because they're wearing a hat?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, when I go to a casino and play, I wear a hat. It's not, you know, it's nothing. Some people just like hats. The play tells us everything. We may not pick up on your appearance. We may not, you know, pick up on certain things that an AP may do, but the play speaks for itself most of the time. Like we talked about before, sometimes there's a good cover, but usually it's the play that we're looking at.
Now, here in Vegas, there's been a big move to throw out slot machine players. And I'm also hearing stories from other parts of the country now that other places are barring slot players. Is this something you guys look for? How do you handle this?
Yeah, when you told me that, actually, it was the first I've heard of it. We don't normally pay attention to slots that hard because everything's electronic. You know, the slot people take care of their end. For instance, if Bob comes in and, you know, he's sitting there playing a video poker machine, we're not necessarily going to pick up on him right away, but the slot people may, just because of the play, the name. I don't know, you know, I don't know what they look for, but on our end, we're not looking for slots that hard, in my experience, because the money can go out so much faster on a table game or in the cage or someplace, you know, where money can transfer hands quickly. A slot machine, everything is kind of already left, in my opinion, everything's left on a blueprint. Every time you hit the button, it generates a record. Every time your play happens, it generates a record, and that record can be, you know, traced back if people need to go back and look at it at the paperwork, on the paperwork end. But it's not something that we actively search out. not really sure what the plays are. I'd be interested to know of why, you know, why they're taking a stance on banning people on slots. But that's the first I heard of it was when you guys told me.
Well, let me give you some ideas.
All right.
There are some, we'll call them must-hit-by slots.
Okay.
A must-hit-by slots would be some kind of jackpot is going to go off before it reaches $500.
Gotcha.
And it continues to go up. Now, if you find an abandoned machine like that and it's at 490, good luck at finding that. Any player with a clue as to what's going on is going to sit down and play it until it hits.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be a positive play, but it usually is. There are a number of slots. The old time, on they had piggy bankings where you could see a number. Many slots have patterns where if they get six or more of something in a particular area, then it's going to be a positive play until something happens. And so there's a community of players who have this kind of information as to, yeah, this is what you look for on these, this is what you look for on those. I'm not going into great detail on purpose, but you're getting the good, you're understanding the general idea of what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Sounds like your casino doesn't pay any attention to those machines.
No, it's like I said, there's you take priority, and for us, and maybe not, I won't say the casino, but maybe the surveillance department, where we won't, that won't be our first priority.
Nor should it be.
Yeah. And you know, going back to your side of it, if you're that player, great, and that's just my personal opinion. If somebody's going to win it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. If it's you 20 times and somebody else 3 times, that's their fault.
But on video poker, there are a number of casinos with progressives
mm-hmm.
where they start with a game that usually is not particularly high paying, but the one or more progressives keep rising until eventually it's a positive play. Does surveillance keep track of the same guys who show up every time the meter is at a certain height?
Honestly, no, not on my experience, because it's like I said, it, you know, you prioritize, and that's probably low on the priority list for my group.
That's a good answer. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I knew you would like that one, but no, I'm not trying to diss video poker players at all. But you know, the everything is in so much flux that would be low on our radar.
Does not using a player's card ring any flags to you guys, one way or the other?
No, not really. I mean, I'll go back to card counting. I've seen card counters get raided. I've seen people who were hole carding get raided, and just have no fear of losing the play, because sometimes the casino doesn't even pay attention to it on the floor. Honestly, I've come across a lot of times where somebody's blatantly hole carding, just like all the way down in the chair, and nobody has really even batted an eye at it, and the person was getting raided the entire time. And it's something that, you know, just scanning around the pit would tell you, oh, hey, you have a person hole carding over there. Just tell the dealer to straighten up, you know, straighten up their hole card. But yeah, I mean, refusals are refusals. It may even draw more attention being a refusal. I'm not sure how people feel about that, but you know, sometimes people get complacent, and it's like, oh, you know, here's Bob Dancer. He's on blackjack 8-10, and you know, oh, that's just Bob. He's here all the time.
Do you use OSN, Finn, Griffin, any of those, and who's in charge of looking up the person that's being rated and seeing if their name is in one of the databases?
That would be one of the surveillance people. Yeah, we would. We've used a few of them over the several properties I've been at. It's always you want to take everything on a case by case basis. If you feel like it's something that you need to look up, you look it up. Sometimes you find your answer. Sometimes you don't. I've seen a lot of people still that are card, you know, with a, 25 to 400 spread, and they're not in any database. They're just doing it, getting out of there and not getting identified, and they're still doing a pretty good job of it. It still happens, so it's really good. But, yeah, we will check it out. We'll check out from time to time and see if we can locate some people and just, inform table games as best we can. Hey, Richard Munchkin's on the table over here, and, he's pole guarding or whatever, and we found that, just scanning around the pits, like, oh, hey, that guy might look familiar from a flyer or something that we saw, and then we verify it. So, yeah, we do use several different programs to try to keep up with everybody.
So you would be able to, you scanned around, you saw me, you thought something looked a little off. You're able then to say, is that player being raided, and find out the name and details up
sure.
where you are, and then look it up.
Yep. If you're getting raided, we can do that. And then if you're not, even if you're not raided, we can still probably just look until we find it. If you feel like you've been doing this for, 15, 20 years, and your picture's probably out there, your picture probably is out there. Maybe there's not a name attached to it. Some people do a great job of not getting identified. Their picture may be out there 100 times, but nobody knows their name. But that's all part of the game, I guess, which is awesome for us because it always gives us something to do.
Yeah, I have a co-host who might fit into that category. From your point of view, how user-friendly are these databases? So assuming this player, you didn't know their name, you knew he's wearing a brown jacket and a Chicago Cubs hat, how long would it take you? I mean, you can't be sorting by brown jackets. You can't be sorted by baseball hats.
Well, he could sort by extremely good-looking.
Oh, I didn't know we were still talking about my co-host, but okay.
I thought he was giving you a compliment, Bob.
I'm pretty well limited to video poker. And since we are throwing compliments around, this is a good time to take a break for a commercial. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In December, the South Point is running its usual half price for almost everything, where you use your points starting as soon as the NFR rodeo is over until Christmas Eve. This year, it's between December 16th through December 24th. If you pay for your points, virtually everything is half price, including movie tickets. You can buy movie tickets for next year, half price now, New Year's Eve packages, rooms, meals, etc. Also, Christmas Day, there'll be double points for video poker players. Penny slot players get 10 times points, and other slots get 5 times points. Keep in mind that the base point structure is 0.30%, so double points at the South Point is equivalent to 6 times points at most other casinos. Every Monday is Seniors Day, half-price meals and bingo if you use your points. And there's, the new semester of free video poker classes is beginning Tuesday, January 8th, starting at noon. If you're planning on being in Vegas early next year and are interested, check out the schedule on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. Through the end of this calendar year, listeners to our show who have not been a Gold member at videopoker.com previously will get 30 days of Gold. The address is videopoker.com/GWAE. The game of the week is the new version of Dream Card. In many respects, it plays the same as the old version. It takes 10 coins, and periodically you get a Dream Card, which becomes the best possible card. The difference is, now you get the Dream Card less frequently, but when you do it, it is typically on a much better hand. They sort hands in the background, and when they know you're going to get a Dream Card, they'll sort hands in the background and pick the best of 3 or 4 and give you that one. So the ending result is approximately the same in terms of expected value. If you look on the help screen, it will tell you how much the expected value is for that particular game. The strategy required for Dream Card is identical to the base game. So if you know how to play 9-6 double double bonus, for example, you know how to play 9-6 double double bonus Dream Card. All right, we are back with Griff, who is a surveillance guy from somewhere other than Las Vegas. And my first question has to do with jewelry, which could include rings or watches, etc. Kenny Houston, the late Kenny Houston, once wrote that he was picked off because he wore the same ring time after time after time, and the surveillance guys noticed that the guy with this particular ring, they didn't know his name, did these things. Do you guys pay any attention to that? Do you have a database of jewelry?
That's pretty good. I've never seen a database of jewelry, but yeah, I mean, I have seen the same person.
I'm giving you good ideas. I'm not
it is. That's great.
Intentionally doing this.
That's great. But I have seen the same people, you know, sometimes the repeat, I don't want to say repeat offenders, that's not the right word, the repeat APs will come in almost in a uniform and wear the same exact thing every time you see them. And it's just like, oh, there they are again. And it's, you know, almost not even not even that hard at that point. Yeah, I mean, you definitely want to change it up. Jewelry's a good one. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, we have a hard and fast rule. If you ever get backed off, the hat goes in the trash, never to be worn again.
What about your wedding ring or your watch or something like that, Richard? If it's a generic band, fine. But if it's your $50,000 Rolex, it's pretty flashy. Do you put that in the trash too?
I wouldn't put it in the trash, but I probably would not wear it, at least not for years, you know. Certainly not in the casino where I got backed off.
Now, I remember you, Richard, telling a story about was it a wig that you had or a beard?
I had a friend who was wearing a wig and a fake beard, and a boss went walking by, did a 180, looked at him and said, "Is that a fake beard?" And he said, yeah, you know. And the guy said, "I thought so," and just turned around and walked away. Now, Cellini used to say that you could spot wigs based on – now, that was back when the cameras were worse, I guess. There was something about them that he said sort of lit up on camera that let you know it was a synthetic wig.
Well, I never heard that. No, I mean, usually we just look for the sometimes, you know, you see a bad toupee or something like that, but nothing that would actually stand out on camera. And I've seen some weird ones. I've seen the Rasta look. I've seen the you know, you should just put a sign on it that says this is a wig. And it's I've seen some strange ones, but yeah, nothing electronically like that I've seen.
You know, do you look at whether people are drinking alcohol, or I mean, does that have any effect? Or as you say, the play is going to determine.
The play always determines it for me. When I'm looking at somebody, you know, they could have a beer in front of them, they could have three beers in front of them. I don't know what's in them, but that's never a factor. I mean, if you can see that the person is slosh drunk, you know, that might be a factor, but if they're just, you know, casually drinking beers, it's not really a big deal.
A cocktail waitress several years ago on this show said at her casino they had a code with the straws, such as you got an extra, I don't remember what the code was, but you got an extra straw in a drink if it was non-alcoholic, or maybe a red straw or something, so that surveillance could tell if it was alcoholic or not. So assuming players hadn't figured out the code, you guys apparently don't do anything like that.
No, but I can see where that would definitely help. And I know some places differentiate. I've seen places do clear glass versus frosted glass or something like that, or, you know, lime or no lime or something. But that was mainly for the food and beverage purpose, not for us.
So let's say you're surveilling and you come across a player who you that you know that you believe is an AP, but you did not kick him out or did not do anything with it on this particular trip. He got out of there before you took any action. How long do you keep his picture? Do you ever go and review? Are they posted on your bulletin boards that if this guy comes in again, blah, blah, blah? How does that work?
Sure. I mean, I have no problem, just letting someone walk out the door, number one, especially if it's an AP. If you're on your way out, you're on your way out. Great. You got me today. All right. Good for you. I mean, we will definitely, keep your picture up, maybe to evaluate you next time you come in. Or, hey, if you spot this person again, they beat us for 10,000 today or something like that. Check out their play the next time they're here. And sometimes it's nothing. I'll use you for an example again, Bob. You come in and play blackjack one day and smoke us for 20,000, and we really didn't get a lot of play out of your. Maybe it was just a shoe and a half, and we really didn't get a lot out of your evaluation. We might put you up. Hey, next time this guy's in, let's check him out. Let's see if he's counting or not. And sometimes the answer is no.
Oh, was I wearing an afro when I won that
You were. Yeah, it
20,000?
was the Rasta wig. Yes.
Ah, good. Okay.
Now,
So.
what about if somebody beats you for 40 or 50,000 and you know that they're not counting? Now, there are some casinos that are just going to back the player off anyway, right? Because they just rather would not take that kind of risk, right? Even though the guy might be a really good player for the casino, how do they feel about that? I mean,
As far as table games, I mean, it's hard
yeah.
to every joint is different, and the reason why I say that, some people like the action, some people sweat the action, and the people that sweat the action when somebody beats you for 50,000, they may call us 10 different times. Are you sure? Are you sure? They got to be doing something. Are you sure? But they're winning. I know people win. It's okay. it's not. There's not always something going on. It's legit play, and they beat us. And then the next time they come in, they beat you for another 40, and it's like. Then you get 20 calls. Okay, what do we do? Let them keep playing. It's called house edge. It'll come back. Over time.
Sounds like you work in an enlightened casino.
No, I no. That's my answer. So it's sometimes you don't get people that see your point of view either. A lot of people, and then the first time they come back and lose 150, it's there's no call. There's no call saying, oh. He's down 150, or oh hey, you were right. But it's hard to make a point sometimes, especially when money leaves. Some people that I've dealt with over the years have definitely got it on the table game end, and some people just don't, and there rarely is an in between. And I've heard you say that casino people are mindless, and I won't fully agree with that, but I've gotten that over the years. There's some people that you just can't talk to. It's just
No,
never going to work.
I will admit that there are some sharp people who are working in casinos who do get it, as you
Yes.
say, who do
Yeah.
get it, and they know that some, if no player ever won, then nobody would gamble. So,
Right.
yeah.
Exactly.
But sometimes they just do things that are mindless, like bar slot players.
Yeah, I don't get it, and sometimes it's you I it's always called a business decision, but sometimes the business decision doesn't make any sense.
Okay, Griff, are you now or have you been in a position where you hire and fire surveillance operators?
Yes.
Okay, what kind of person are you looking for? What would make the ideal surveillance operator in your point of view? What would make you think this guy isn't going to work?
That's a great question. Normally, when I'm interviewing, I look for math skills, number one. It's a complicated job when you're talking odds, payouts, dollar amounts, camera numbers. Everything has a time attached to it. Report numbers. I look for people that are numbers oriented. That helps. It helps a lot, especially when people can do math quickly. Because we can hit pause, but not all the time. There's sometimes where we have to generate numbers pretty quick. I look for people that are going to be a good fit. Surveillance people, we're not that front of house person that has the greatest customer service in the world because we don't deal with people. We see it, it's hard because we see the worst side in people sometimes. We, you know, we see the thieves and we see the fights and the drunks and, you know, all of that. And it's something that we get used to. So we kind of actually have to keep that in mind. You know, sometimes people are a great fit. Sometimes people have seen it before at other places. Sometimes the past job may help, but, it's definitely, it's not the Disneyland. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah. That surprises me. That is not what I would have expected, that, you know, that math skills would be important, but that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, even if you take AP out of it, just watching a game, use roulette, for example, you know, you have to be able to do 35 times one. You have to be able to do 17, eight combination bets. There's an 8, 11, and a 17. What's it add up to? And sometimes you have to do it quick, and some people, you know, can't grasp it. And I'm not looking for rocket science. You know, sometimes it's just basic math, add, subtract, multiply, divide percentages, and then that'll get you through your time.
Thanks. In Vegas, a lot of jobs are, especially in the past, of who do you know? If somebody who currently works there says this is a good guy, that would be a step up in the interviewing process. Does that work very much in the surveillance departments?
Absolutely. Yeah, just like anywhere else. I mean, you always want to help people succeed, and then if they want to go elsewhere, you give them all the tools, and especially if they're good. I don't want to recommend someone who's not that great to somebody else, you know. But the people that are really good, yeah, you always want to give a good recommendation and help them. And I've gotten the recommendation from people, you know, this guy's interested, you might want to take a look, and, you know, I interview them, and they're great. But it definitely goes a long way.
Have you also gotten
a different question?
Yeah, have you also gotten, this is my idiot nephew, give him a job?
I've never been pressured into it, but it's always like, we might get one of those, hey, can you interview this guy? You'll see for yourself.
What percentage of the problems you discover, and assuming for now the problem is defined as threatening the bottom line of the casino, for now that's the problem, what percentage of that problem are APs of various sorts, cheaters, employees?
That's another good question. You guys are loaded with good questions. The employee theft is going to do the most damage. There's a lot of times, you know, the place is so big and it could go unnoticed for a while. Employee theft always adds up much faster than any AP. I don't want to put anybody down, but APs are smarter than most people. So you know when to stop. You know when to get out. You know, I've been playing for 4 hours. I don't have any heat. Maybe I'll go back later, or maybe I'll, you know, hit them tomorrow or something like that. Where the thief can't stop, they can't stop stealing, and they're going to get caught eventually. It's just the damage that somebody can do on the inside is much higher than the damage somebody can do externally.
What do you think the percentage is of, how much cheating do you run into? And is most of it really amateur stuff? I mean, the stuff I read about in the newspapers is, you know, some idiot capped a $25 bet when he was drunk or whatever. How much actual sort of what we would call professional cheating do you run into?
Professional cheating, well, that's a good question. There's two parts. How often is it caught, and how often have we seen it? I guess are two different questions. But the professional stuff is number one, is done really well. I mean, when you see someone, you can definitely tell the difference between someone who knows what they're doing and they've made a career out of it against a $25 bet capper who's drunk. It's almost like an art form when you see it pulled off. For instance, a dice slide. You know, a dice slide's never just one guy. It's a team. And when you see it in action, it's actually orchestrated, and the timing is perfect. And if the timing's not perfect, it's going to get caught. But the timing of it, and the act itself, you know, it's a hit and run, but at the same time, they hit you for, you know, a good amount of money. But that kind of stuff is, it happens, but it doesn't happen a lot. I don't know if it's just places like Atlantic City and Vegas, they could be a little different because you can blast up and down the boardwalk or you can blast up and down the strip and you can hit, you know, 7 or 8 different joints maybe in one or two days and do the move over and over and over again until it doesn't work anymore or until you made enough money. But it happens kind of infrequently. At least it's caught infrequently sometimes by us. It's more sporadic than anything.
How often do you end up with the drunk capping the $25 bet or the other kind of stupid cheating, amateur cheating?
The amateur stuff happens much more. It's, most of the time, to be honest with you, it's taking advantage of a dealer who's not paying attention or a dealer that's weak. They'll be the prime target. And then, you know, it's just game on from there. But that happens much more than the elaborate stuff. There's probably more advantage play than cheating on a daily basis, I would say, on average, at least, you know, from what I've seen. It's not and I know every place is different. There might be places where your procedures are everything. Richard, you dealt, so you know. Your procedures are everything. If everybody's following the right procedure, they're much less susceptible to getting burned. And the better procedure that there is on the floor, the easier it is for us up here, and everything kind of flows well. But when it's not like that, you really leave yourself open to a lot of outside cheating, a lot of outside theft.
And is advantage play something you see on a daily basis or weekly basis?
Yeah, I would say, let me see if I can put an average to it, maybe one or two a week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, especially card counters in the beginning have this feeling like all surveillance does is look for me, you know, like that's all their focus. And just, you know, taking this show as an example, so much of what you talk about has nothing to do with advantage player card counters. It's, you know, all the other stuff that you guys have to be doing up there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, your first line of defense should be against table game personnel, and they're the ones that you're interacting with, you know, 100% of the time. If you can fool them, more than likely you'll be on the table for a while. It's we find some APs, but it's your game down there has to be strong, and it's some people can talk too. The more you can talk it up and blend in, you know, the less you are to getting heat.
So the real threat is the phone call to surveillance more so than surveillance just looking around and picking you off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're talking to everybody on the floor. You're talking to them. I mean, they can pick up on certain things too. Are you trying to hide yourself at the table, or are you, you know, sometimes engaging in conversation goes a long way. You know, sometimes engaging the dealer goes a long way. A toke might go a long way. You know, you've been in that situation before on both ends. You dealt and you're an AP. Sometimes that quarter toke just might shut somebody up for a half hour, 45 minutes. You know what I mean? It's that little thing can go a long way, especially if you're nice to them. A lot of dealers deal with a lot of crap all the time. And, you know, the first sign of something, they might call up.
All right. We've been talking to Griff, who's a surveillance guy, and we're less than halfway through our questions, and our time is up. So, Griff, can we talk you into coming back for next week's show as well?
Absolutely.
That's the right answer. Okay. So, thank you, Griff. Thank you, Richard. And go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.